Welcome to Financially Savvy in 20 Minutes, a podcast hosted by me, Natalie Torres-Adad, an international award-winning author, two-time TEDx speaker, and investor, along with Vera Egli, an investor, sales, and marketing pro, and multi-language podcaster. We will share the tips and tricks from interviews with self-made entrepreneurs, leaders, and those who have attained financial freedom while learning financial literacy in multiple languages. Hello, hello. Welcome to Financially Savvy in 20 Minutes. I'm Natalie Torres-Adad, and I'm here with my co-host.
Vera, how are you guys?
Hey, it feels like it's been a while, but today we have a special treat. I'm lucky enough to call him a friend, as well as someone who jokingly laughed about it previous, that I haven't seen him in about almost 2 years, and we actually met at the University of Ohio. We were both speakers at Economy, which is an incredible conference all about money. And not only was his presentation so inspiring, but what he does for a living, and obviously, and we're going to talk about his book that's coming out. There's just so much going on. We know him as Doc G, but he is Jordan Grummet, and he's just been an amazing advocate voice for things that we just are afraid to talk about. We know it's awkward to talk about, and we'll have him tell us a little bit more about his story, why he does what he does. But I'm just going to go right into it, because I usually ask people the question, like, you know, do you remember the first time you got paid? Well, but you're a doctor. And I think the real question I'd like to ask you first is, what made you think about creating not just a book, but dedicating your work to help people, having that conversation about taking care of our loved ones, especially elderly parents?
You know, it's funny. I was 7 years old and I looked up to my father. He was everything I wanted to be, and he was a doctor, an oncologist. He treated people with cancer, and he died when I was 7 years old suddenly. And I knew at that time that I wanted to fill his shoes. I wanted to go ahead and do all those things he was never able to do. He died in his prime. He was 40. He was making such a difference in people's lives, and I wanted to be just like him. And that carried me. It carried me through. I had a learning disability. I got through that. I went through high school, the college. And I knew that I wanted to go into medicine. It was the only thing I knew for sure. It was just that deeply ingrained into my personality and identity. I got to medical school, and this is life telling you something. My first week in medical school, I volunteered in the hospice program. So this was, I volunteered to help patients and families of people who were dying. It was the first clinical experience I ever had, which makes sense, right? Because I dealt with my own father's death. I felt that helplessness of not knowing what to do for myself or my family. So as I started identifying as becoming a doctor, I'm like, how can I help people who are going through something that I went through as a little kid? But sometimes we don't listen to our heart. So instead of going into hospice medicine, finishing medical school, residency, going into hospice medicine, I went into general internal medicine and kind of forgot how passionate I was about that until a hospice nurse saw me taking care of someone at the end of their life, one of my patients. And she was like, oh, you need to work with us in hospice, which started my journey into hospice. And the reason why I bring this up is at that time in my life, I was getting really burnt out in medicine, all the paperwork and the electronic medical records. And I was finding that this thing that I had done partially because my father died and I wanted to continue that connection with him wasn't speaking to my soul nearly as much as public speaking and writing and communicating these things that I would spend every moment I had in my free time doing, but I never thought I could do it for a living. Fast forward to a point I got burned out in medicine, realized I had enough money, I was financially independent, I could do what I want. I started turning towards finance. But the one part of medicine, as I got rid of everything I didn't like, the one part of medicine that I held on to was the hospice work. But funny enough, I found that the hospice work taught me a lot about money, something else that was interesting to me, that I had been studying my finances and I had become a podcaster and a writer about personal finance. But the perspective of the dying was so important to what I was also talking to people about when it came to their money. Like when people get to that end of life point and realize that they only have weeks or months to go, they start really solidifying what's important to them. And so I saw this opening where I could take what the dying have taught me and bring it to the personal finance community, bring it to young people and say, hey, this is what the dying are struggling with. How can we take that now and start building a financial framework that speaks to those regrets the dying had, or at least what the dying realized was their true purpose and meaning. How can we start doing that at a much younger age and also figure out that financial framework to allow it?
Yeah, I saw your book trailer on YouTube, and I was telling Natalie, it's just, no one talks about that. You know, the expression, the youth is wasted on the young. It's like you've encapsulated and said, hey, you need to live your life right now, so that when you get there, you really go without those regrets. And a lot of it, you know, finances tie into those regrets. You can have a lot of heaviness when you're already dealing with an illness, and on top of that, dealing with poor finances. I mean, I can only imagine the stress that you see. But I can also, on the other hand, see those folks that did take advantage of that, have taken advantage of your words, where they enter into a more, I guess, peaceful exit. Or yeah. Yeah. It's very, a very interesting subject. When I saw that, I was like, wow.
Yeah, the thing I realized is the dying tell young people, YOLO, you only live once, grab it now. Yet the personal finance community says, one day you're going to retire and you want enough money to live. So defer gratification, put your money away in your 401ks, et cetera. So you have like these two different messages from very separate groups. And my big question, why I wrote this book, was how do we put those together? Like, how do we both live only once and take advantage of those unique opportunities right in front of our faces now, but also learn how to defer gratification enough to support our financial needs? Because we may live into our eighth or ninth decade. And that's kind of the crux of the question and what I really thought I could address, because I was part of both of those worlds.
I think that's so brilliant. You're saying, how do you combine that? So you're becoming this translator, the liaison between, like you're saying, the young and the old. And Vera and I had this conversation, have this conversation all the time, really. Most of our friends being in their early 40s, we are taking care of our elderly parents or grandparents. And we see that often, so often, and I'm sure you do too. I'm fortunate enough that I got to read a sneak peek of your book. And something that really grabbed my attention, maybe you can talk to listeners more about it. What is the ice binder, and why is that important to have? But because I was reading and I was like, oh my gosh, I need to make sure not only I have this, but everyone knows they're doing this.
So the ice binder is the in case of emergency binder. We see this especially in personal finance. Usually you have one pair of a spousal group who's totally into the money. And that person who's totally into the money controls all the bank accounts, they control all the investments, they control all the passwords. Maybe they're the ones who pay the bills, or maybe it's the other spouse's, you know, job to pay the bills. We rarely think about what would happen if we suddenly lost our spouse. And that's exactly what happened to my mom, right? My dad died. When my dad died in 1980, my mom had never written a check before. And back then, we didn't use credit cards. We used checks or cash, right? So The ice binder is pretty much an organized binder that asks you a series of questions, and there are a bunch of them commercially available nowadays, that help you write down all the important information in case something were to happen to you and your spouse or your parents or your children need to start making financial decisions. So yes, if you die, it's important, but also if you become disabled, if you're not able to do things for yourself, where are all the bank accounts? Where are all the life insurances? How do I sign on to the website? Who are the doctors? Like, God forbid something happens to me and my wife together and my kids have a medical emergency. Where do my parents take them? What are your passwords? And this is not only financial stuff. This can be social media stuff. God forbid something happens to me. This is different than the 1980 that my father died in. Now we've got Facebook and Twitter and TikTok. Yep. Some of us even have businesses that use all these resources. The ice binder is a place for you to put all your financial information, your passwords, put it all together, codify it so that God forbid something happens to you, your family can either go on your laptop or go into your safety deposit box. I suggest you have both a digital and a hard copy and can have all the information you need, because they're going to be going through tons of stress already. Just dealing with the loss of a loved one or having a loved one in the hospital, stressful enough. At least it's one thing we can have ready and prepared for them. This changes people's lives. I can't tell you how many stories there are of someone whose family member died and they're like, and he had all these gold coins and gold bullion in his safe in the house. And guess what? He didn't leave the combination of the safe to anyone. He put thousands of dollars into the safe that was impossible to break into. but no one has a combo. And God knows today, crypto, right? Mm-hmm. What happens where crypto is in a wallet and no one knows how to access your crypto wallet? So like, yeah, this conversation is just as important today as it was back in 1980.
Do you give individuals in your book or when you're consulting them, do you give them an age range as to when they should start? Obviously, your parents, you should tell them, mom, dad, please have a binder already. Or if you have a guardian, please have a binder already. But what about somebody that's in their 40s, maybe no kids yet? Should they already put something together? What are your, how do you consult your clients?
So I would tell people, and the rule of thumb is once you're 18 years old, you probably should start think of things like a will. You should start thinking of healthcare, power of attorney, these type of things. And you mm-hmm. should probably think of an ICE binder. Pretty much the moment you have assets, mm-hmm. it's important to start deciding what you're going to do with those things. Now, when you're 18, a will can be a single page document that you print out from the internet and doesn't need much. Whereas when you're 40 or 50 and you've got assets and you've got children and you've got parents and you've got people you want to leave money to, it's a whole different story. Same with healthcare issues. Once you turn 18, you want someone to be your healthcare power of attorney, or at least a thought of that. Yes, it will just defer to your parents if something, God forbid, were to happen to you, but it's something you might want to codify, or a financial power of attorney, right? Because if right. you have assets and you're above 18 and something happens to you and you can't make decisions for yourself, if you have not codified who your financial power of attorney is, it is an incredibly difficult system to go through the courts to be able to access and make those decisions. So mm-hmm. I think 18 is a great age to start thinking about those. The documents may be incredibly simple at that time, but right. actually, as you get older, you start adding in the layers and adding in information.
That is such good advice. I mean, you're right. When we're younger, we're not thinking of all these things, and until you're in it. And that happened, my husband and I, a few years ago when he got really sick, all of a sudden we're like, hold on, I don't have in written power of attorney for him. You know, now we have our stuff in order, but it's unfortunate that it happens usually when you need it the most, right? And so it's great that you have this, not only book, but in your podcast. That's something that's great about listening to Earn and Invest, is that there's so many different topics that are awkward conversations that we must have with ourselves, with our spouses, with really our loved ones. I know you mentioned a little bit about mining the gap. And I think, you know, when we're trying to save money, when we're trying to earn and probably make more, there's just so many different ways to go about it. What has been the most practical way for you? You know, especially when you have transitions in careers too, but what's been the most practical thing for you that you felt has worked, whether it's the FIRE movement or whatever you decide to do?
So we built in budgeting at a very young age, and our family, we're not budgeters. Like, we are not pen and paper or spreadsheet people at all. So my wife and I, before we even had children, we realized we need a simple way to budget, which we don't think about, so that savings, investing, all that was on autopilot. So for instance, one way that we were able to mine the gap, we were able to, you know, basically the gap between what we brought in and what we spent, we were able to keep that a huge gap, is from the beginning, we decided we're going to just live off of one of our incomes. So when my wife and I were younger, I started residency as a physician, so I made a small income. My wife had just started as a computer consultant, so she made an income. So as opposed to budgeting, we just said, okay, your income goes directly into retirement savings, and then whatever is left goes half into debt and half into investments. My income, we're just going to use that to pay off bills. And at that time, her income was higher than my income. So then when my income started going up, we switched it over and we said, okay, now yours is going to be savings, investment, debt, and mine is going to be spending. So what we did is we built in easy ways to budget without having to worry or think about it. And that way the money was either in the bank or not, because we got rid of all the excess so we couldn't even see it. So it was either in the bank or not. When we looked at that account, it was either there or not. If there was nothing there, we weren't spending. If there was something there, we could. And we started using tricks and techniques like that. We automated savings, obviously. So as we made more and more money, we would automate our 401k savings, right? So my wife's 401k would go automatically. Mine would go automatically. Simple things like that to try to make it as easy as possible so you take the thought process out of the decisions.
I think that's a key, two keywords, thought process, because it seems like it's such an effort, but when you actually automate it with, obviously you should glance at it here and there just to make sure the automation didn't suddenly stop for some reason. But yeah, that's really, I wonder sometimes why it's difficult for people to initiate that. Is it, you think it's fear or they just don't know?
I think it's hard to let go of your money, especially when it's first coming in, right? So we like to see the bank account. We like to see something bump. When you automate, when you put it on its way before you can even see it, I think sometimes that gives people a sense of scarcity. And I think of it the exact opposite way, right? It's abundance. I don't even have to think about it. And it's going and it's building wealth for me. But I think a lot of people feel like, oh, I just hit six figures. And then all of a sudden they look at what's available for them to spend and it's $5,000. It feels like there's a little more scarcity than they thought there would be. So I think that's one of the reasons, at least. It gives people almost a lack of control where they really want control over the money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's actually a really good point. It's scarcity still is a big obstacle to overcome. So where can somebody find out, first of all, your book? When will it be out? Can they pre-order already? And where can we listen to your podcast? And how can we get a hold of you?
All right. So the book, Taking Stock, A Hospice Doctor's Advice on Financial Independence, Building Wealth, and Living a Regret-Free Life, is coming out through Ulysses Press on August 2nd. It is up on Amazon now already, but we're really making the push in July for pre-sales. The best way to learn about me in general is my name at jordangrummet.com. So jordangrummet.com. That's kind of a hub which will send you towards the book. It'll send you towards the podcast. I have a blog. I have a medical blog from years back. So it'll send you in all those directions. The podcast is earnandinvest.com. Easiest way to go there, and it will send you through to all my socials, because unfortunately I didn't do a great job. My socials are all under slightly different names. So best to go to the websites, and that will send you. And take a look at the book. I'm really excited to bring these two worlds together in a way that we really don't generally talk about personal finance.
Absolutely. I'm telling you, it's such a clever and very necessary subject to discuss. So thank you so much for being on the podcast today. And we can't wait to have you back so we can dive into the book once more folks have read it.
Thank you. And I'm always happy to come back.
Have you soon. Bye.
Thank you. And please make sure to subscribe and leave your comments and reviews. To learn more about the podcast, check out the website and Instagram, Financially Savvy in 20 Minutes, and watch interviews on YouTube and IGTV. To become a sponsor or hire us for your next workshop or speaking engagement, please visit financiallysavvyin20minutes.com. All it takes is 20 minutes daily to become financially savvy. Music by Nikki and produced by Robert DeLude.